HRheadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Jonathan Logue. Jonathan is a Director of Learning and Development at LinkedIn. Jonathan, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Jonathan, we're gonna talk about all things L&D from a LinkedIn point of view. Before we get started, obviously we're recording this as COVID-19 is re-rising in the Irish or around the world. How are you guys at LinkedIn adapting to it, or are you all working from home or primarily working from home?
Yeah, Declan, we're primarily working from home at the moment. We are, you know, paying close attention to what's coming out from government, obviously, and following their guidelines very, very carefully. But certainly since, middle of March, we've pretty much all been working from home in the largest work from home experiment ever completed on the planet. So we're learning as we're going. And certainly I'll be talking a bit more about how that and what that looks like for us in the learning and development team over the course of this podcast.
Brilliant stuff. Let's get into L&D. What's LinkedIn's approach to learning and development for your own staff?
Well, you know, obviously I've been with LinkedIn for just over 6 years now, and I've been in the learning development team over that time. Our kind of vision in terms of what we do at LinkedIn around learning and development is pretty much the way we look at it is, and this is, you know, you'd see this in any other company, but our job is to equip, engage, and inspire every single employee at LinkedIn to do the best work of their career. In LinkedIn, you know, this is not seen as a job for life. You're here for a certain period of time to do the best work of your career, and then you'll go on and do something even more amazing afterwards. So from that point of view, it's always something that that certainly attracted me to the company, first of all, and still engages me in coming to work every day, is around how do we go about doing that, and what are the kind of things that we're doing from a learning and development point of view to really manifest and sort of live that vision that we've set for ourselves.
Yeah, I actually always find it interesting. I think more so, LinkedIn are certainly the first company who I can recall who celebrate that whole next sort of play approach, and you know what the person might do after LinkedIn. In terms of that mindset within the organization, does that put pressure on you as an L&D function to get people up to speed so they can be as effective as possible, as quickly as possible in their time within LinkedIn?
I don't think it puts us under pressure. I think there's an expectation. Certainly there was an expectation when I was going through the recruitment process, obviously before I joined LinkedIn. I remember one of the questions that I was asked by one of the interviewers was, okay, say you get the job, what will you do when you leave? And I was struck by that question because I'd never heard that question being asked before. When you then join LinkedIn, obviously you come with a set of skills and experiences and everything else. Now, there's the harder skills and there's the softer skills. And then there's also the fit with our culture and values, which are incredibly important to us. So from a cultural point of view, we actually have one of the cultural tenets that we have at LinkedIn is transformation. In other words, you're here to transform. You're not here to stay the same. And so there's an expectation rather than an invitation to do that. Now, our value set then it also is very, very important to us as well. And we would interview to those values and look and try and seek out those people that are matching our corporate values and also embody that kind of cultural view of the world that we would have around being deeply collaborative, results oriented, and then obviously have that transformation mindset. So there's a kind of, you know, obviously there's the skills they bring and the experiences, but then there's also how they would show up doing their work and how they would collaborate and work with other people on the team in LinkedIn that really sort of sets them apart from maybe others.
And when you consider that that recruitment process within LinkedIn, do you try to assess people's ability to learn or their, you know, that skill set themselves, the skill of learning?
Well, we try and ask. Well, certainly, we just ask them through curious questions more than anything else. I think what's happened to us since I've been there is we obviously got acquired by Microsoft, sure. And Satya Nadella is a wonderful proponent of the work of Carol Dweck around mindset. And even him, he will talk about it in terms of, you know, if there's a learn-it-all and a know-it-all, give me a learn-it-all any day of the week. And I think that maxim would certainly apply for how we would look at talent in LinkedIn. You know, we don't have those kind of high potential programs that you may see in other organizations purely because we think that everybody's got potential and everybody's got talent. And so, you know, it's about why would we have a potential program for certain people when we believe that everybody's got potential? And so let's try and maximize how much of that potential that we can realize within their time at LinkedIn.
You mentioned hard versus soft skills. How do you guys differentiate in terms of what you offer as a suite of learning products, say, for your own stuff?
I don't know whether we differentiate per se, Declan, if I'm honest. I think what we have done is we try and create opportunities for learning which are synchronous and asynchronous. So obviously there's going to be some learning opportunities that are formal, and it involves attending training programs and that kind of stuff. And some of those training programs are internal, run by ourselves, and some of them are run externally by other bodies. But then there's also, we would use LinkedIn Learning an awful lot to supplement that learning experience and that learning journey. So sometimes you have to do a bit of learning before a particular program, for example, and certainly afterwards. And because LinkedIn Learning is such an important part of what we do at LinkedIn, and certainly from a learning and development point of view, we try and make sure that we use and reference the LinkedIn Learning content as much as possible, because we get some great authors, we get some great content. It's a product that we believe in. You know, we want to be customer zero of LinkedIn Learning. And so we try and use it as much as we possibly can to supplement the learning opportunities that we offer our individual contributors and also our managers as well in globally.
And do individual employees, do they get assigned learning depending on role? Or is it a sort of a blended approach where they get to choose certain aspects of what learnings they go after?
Well, certainly, if you're having a conversation with your own manager, I think there is going to be opportunities there where learnings are going to be reviewed and development opportunities are going to be shared and agreed. And then how the employee goes about, because again, you know, we have to make sure that our employees sort of take ownership of their own learning. So this is not something that is driven by the manager. We believe that, you know, candidly, your learning is your own business. You should manage it like a CEO. And so, you know, while a manager can help and obviously the organization can support, this is very much an opportunity for the employee to drive their own learning. Hopefully it's helping them to be able to do their job better in order for them to do another job somewhere else, hopefully in LinkedIn. But if not in LinkedIn, maybe outside. And that's something that we also encourage as well. Just, you know, this is about realization of your potential as opposed to staying and sticking and doing the same job forever in LinkedIn. We wouldn't see that as being necessarily helpful for either the company or indeed the individual.
Okay. And one of the things you mentioned, Jonathan, is one of the ethoses of you guys is, you know, people are there to transform. So with that aspiration in mind, how do you judge the success of L&D as you guys roll it out to individual employees?
Well, I suppose there's a whole myriad of ways that we would look to assess our own impact. You know, we certainly look at, like many learning and development functions that I've worked for or come across in the past, obviously we look at the kind of the reactions to the training that we have, but we also then can see how we can assess learnings and then the application of those learnings through either, you know, the kind of the quarterly performance review conversations that would happen, or the, you know, the career conversations that also happen, and where, you know, employees can look and see how they've gone about learning the skills that they needed to learn, and then practice those skills and then talk to their manager or talk to their peers about how they've sort of embedded that learning in what they do, so that they're actually getting a chance and an opportunity to see that they are moving forward, that they are growing, that they are developing that and demonstrating that growth mindset that allows them to collect those kind of skills that they need.
Sure. So it's, as you say, it's like backing up the learnings with those experiences, I guess, or a chance to apply the learnings in various different parts of their role.
Yeah, and certainly we would, you know, there's a very common model, a development model, the 70-20-10 model, which is used by many organizations globally. And that 70% is on the job learnings, and then 20% is relational, either coaching or maybe mentoring or other opportunities not in that sphere. And then that 10% is actually the formal learning component, where they'd actually go and maybe do a training course or do further education or go to a conference and those kind of things. So there's a real range in which we try to get people to activate their own learnings and really sort of embody the kind of that culture of transformation that we talk about.
And for you guys in LinkedIn, Jonathan, obviously there's different channels, and you mentioned you want to be customer zero for your own product. Makes complete and utter sense. Do you offer a variety of channels in terms of classroom-based on top of that, or various other methods of delivery?
Oh, we used to, Declan. In the old days, in February.
The good old days.
The good old days, yes. So candidly, I think we would be very much like many other organizations where we were predominantly in the classroom. So we would do instructor-led events live and in person. Our learning and development team in EMEA LATAM, which is the region I'm working in, would all be based in Dublin. And so we would either travel out to our offices across Europe or indeed in Sao Paulo in Brazil or to Dubai. And we would go and run, for example, development weeks where we'd bring our goodness to the employees, our colleagues there in those offices. Since mid-March, what we've had to do is we've had to put that on its head. And so now we're offering 100% live virtual programs throughout the region at various times and dates and offerings that can suit people. What we are doing is that we offer an open enrollment program. So we've got a series of programs that are available to anybody to apply for and to come along and attend. And then also, if there's certain requests that come through from managers or from leaders in their organizations looking for a certain, you know, intervention, for example, or a certain series of workshops, or even just one individual workshop, we can bring that workshop to them and we can do it live virtually, invariably using Zoom. We haven't seen a huge, we would have been blue jeans for video conferencing before all this happened, COVID happened, but we've found Zoom to be the you know, our kind of technology of choice for how we go about doing our live virtual trainings, because of the fact it's got certain functionality around things like breakout rooms and polling and, you know, chat and all that kind of stuff, which just makes it a really engaging tool for us to use in those live virtual formats. Now, also, as you know, what tends to happen is that people can take their in-person programs and try to reduce them into, you know, almost like to reverse engineer them into that live virtual format. What we've found that's more successful is that we actually offer live virtual programs that are built from scratch. And they're built in such a way that they are live virtually designed. And so when they go, when then test them and pilot them and they go live, we tend to see a lot better kind of ROI or a lot better likelihood to recommend scores for those programs that are built from the ground up, if you like, with that live virtual in mind. Now, one of the things that does happen, of course, is the days of the day-long program or the half-day program in the live virtual format have been reduced because, as you know, our attention spans in this format that we're now in the life that we're now leading, is creating moments where our programs are 60 minutes, 90 minutes long, perhaps 2 hours, but no more than that. Now, we have to make sure we put spacing in because obviously we're trying to make our programs as brain friendly as possible. And so by doing that, it means it reduces the amount of time that we get in front of learners. But what we get to do is something quite different by creating more live virtual environments, breakout rooms, polling, et cetera, where people can whiteboard their learnings and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, really interesting. A couple of things there, Jonathan. What's the data telling you in terms of learning outcomes and in terms of the output from the programs? Is there big differences between pre-virtual and post-virtual?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What's been very interesting, and this is an observation that I have, not backed up by any data, I'm afraid. I'd love to be able to provide data on this one. But my own kind of anecdotal feedback or interest would be that what we have is we've got our learners arriving and they're much more, their attention is stretched, even arriving in. So as you know, what we're seeing is we're not getting the chance opportunities for conversations in the corridor or over a coffee. We're also not getting the space between meetings because we were commuting between meeting rooms and now we're not. We're going from one call to the next call to the next call. So what we tend to find is people coming to our sessions who are like on the back of their third or their fourth or their fifth meeting of the day or whatever it is. And so what we find is we have to spend a bit more time just almost grounding people. I certainly find myself having to, you know, ground people and say, it's okay, you're now here, you know, and sort of create that opportunity for them to be a little bit, be more open to learning and be open to the opportunity of sharing experiences. Now, we also sometimes see, and I've seen this on occasion, that we have some people who are suffering from a bit of Zoom fatigue, that what they're doing is they're actually, you know, the minute you talk about a breakout room, they break out and they leave. They run for the hills. And I can understand that because they're going, I just want to be sort of almost like I want to be lectured to on occasion, not all the time, because obviously learning is quite a sweaty sport. It's not one that you can just sit back and watch. You actually have to get involved to actually learn. So I think for many people, they're finding that Zoom fatigue to be really sort of, you know, draining them, and means that they're not really in the right mindset on occasion to fully participate and engage. And that's okay. We've got to be able to be compassionate for our learners, that sometimes, you know, you don't have the perfect environment for learning to happen, but sometimes it has to be good enough for those opportunities to happen. And even for just our colleagues to talk amongst themselves and to just, you know, that social learning, that community-based learning that we would have had in training rooms, we have to create that as well. And so we're using much more breakout rooms for that. The common complaint is, you never gave us enough time, Jonathan. You never gave us enough time in that breakout because we were just getting some really good stuff. And that's okay. But it's always making sure that we keep those learning objectives absolutely key. Now, in answer, another part B of your question that you asked was around, you know, the relevance, I suppose, of what we're doing now. And what I'm certainly seeing is we're having to offer a lot more learning and training programs around some of those softer skills of, you know, how do you go about building better relationships? How do you go about maintaining positive mental health? For our manager population, really, how do I go about demonstrating the care that I have for everybody on my team? And how do I go about doing that when I can't see them? Now, obviously, working from home is having to create a huge amount of trust between manager and employee. I don't think personally I've ever had a problem. I've never seen much of that in LinkedIn. I'm very, very fortunate in that respect, because, you know, you have to have that high trust environment when, you know, you go to where the work is, not to where you have to go to work, if you know what I mean. And so the trust hasn't been an issue, but certainly being more compassionate, being more empathetic to what's happening for employees has been a hugely much more important aspect of a manager's role now than it ever has been.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. Just something to pick up there, even anecdotally, are more people doing more training, even anecdotally, than pre-March, now that they can log in virtually?
I am. So I think, all joking aside, I'm finding better opportunities and more opportunities for my own learning, which is wonderful. I'm enjoying reading more because I'm not spending as much time in my commute. Yeah. While, you know, spending time on a bus is fine. You know, being able to spend more time sort of sharpening the saw, I think is something that I think not only me, but a number of my colleagues have taken on board. We also then, there's one of the things that we do is we try to incentivize and encourage people to learn more by offering. So for example, in the month of October, we actually have a LinkedIn Learning Challenge whereby we have, okay, here's what you need to do. You have to consume some training, consume some content, talk to your manager about how you can apply it. There's all these kind of ways that you can encourage learning to happen in such a way that it actually means that people are putting it as being a more of a priority than it once was. And I think if we can encourage our colleagues to look at learning in that way and to be finding opportunities for them to do it in whatever way that they can, I think all of that is additive. It's cumulative. It helps, you know, the more that I can learn, the more that I can read, the more that I can digest and offer insight to, hopefully that's going to encourage more of those conversations. And then I start to apply that, and that application leads to skill. And the more skill I have, the more valuable I become, and obviously the more valued I become.
And for the trainers themselves, Jonathan, moving to live virtual or whatever way you guys describe it, what were the biggest adaptations for the trainers in terms of how they delivered?
Well, I can speak from my own experience there, because obviously being a facilitator and a trainer for the last number of years, it's always been in person. And so there's a different skill set that you need, a different energy, presence, and everything else that goes with it. And, you know, the facilitators and the trainers listening to this will know exactly what I mean when I say that. In the virtual setting, it's very, very different because you do not, all you're seeing is very, very small pictures of small faces. And so in terms of that feedback that you get in sessions, you don't tend to see as much of that. Also, there's a bit more preparation that goes into it, because what we tend to do is, for some of the programs whereby there may be 40, 50, 60, 70 people on a call for a training course, for example, we would always make sure that you'd never do that alone, that you would be joined by another member of the team who would act as a producer. So the skills of you know, dropping in the workbooks, for example, setting up the polls, doing the breakouts and all that kind of stuff is not done by the facilitator, but is done by the producer who's behind the scenes, who's also then taking questions and then maybe feeding them into the facilitator. So even from that point of view, there's a different skill set that's coming there. Also, it, you know, and again, what I've discovered myself, and you know, being very candid with you, things like, you know, I've had to be able to remind myself that I'm still presenting, I'm still training. And as a result, you know, maybe not wearing the socks or when I'm doing that, maybe getting fully dressed with a, you know, just the work clothes that we normally would wear in January, February and early March, you know, get back into them, because that's the sense I have of, yeah, I'm now going to work. I'm now, I'm on camera, I'm now presenting, and I've got a room that I need to, you know, motivate and inspire to do the best work of their careers. So I better start now.
Yeah, really interesting. Just that sort of change in approach, but just even those triggers to get yourself back in the zone. An interesting thing you mentioned there, and I've noticed it, John, and I'm sure you may have it in meetings, for example, is without those visual cues that, you know, of how people are reacting to what's been said, or in your case, to what message you're trying to get across, it does become much more difficult. A genuine concern that I hear talked about amongst the business community is people not learning those subtle things that you pick up by observing other people. So it's not stuff you'd go to a training session necessarily on, you know, it's that stakeholder management piece in a meeting or things similar to that. Do you have any thoughts on where that will go if we all remain remote for really long periods, or will that just evolve into being something different than what it currently is?
A great question. I think if I knew the answer to that, I'd own my own island.
Fair enough.
In all honesty, I think what we're having to do is, and you're right, there is those chance conversations aren't happening. The conversations where you can sort of have a sidebar conversation with somebody and say, can I just get your sense on this? So I think there's something here around our sense checking muscles are being weakened. In other words, you know, if I'm working in the office, I'm working with my team, I can turn around to them from my desk and say, can I just run something by you? Can I just talk to you about something? I just want to, like, am I going mad in my own head, or does this make sense? And I take huge value out of that because of the people that I work around who inspire me to do what I do. When it comes to the stakeholder management conversations, I think what we're having to do is we're having to spend a lot more time being much more deliberate. First of all, in the organization of those stakeholder engagement conversations, being a lot more deliberate about who our stakeholders are, and being much more intentional about the communications channels that we use to reach those stakeholders. Now, you know, before lockdown, before COVID-19, I would have come across, certainly in LinkedIn, some various kind of tools and frameworks that we use in order to make decisions happen and help us make decisions and make better quality decisions. And then how do we go about, you know, when there's a disagreement between two people on a particular issue, you know, we would talk about a 3-day escalation whereby you try and resolve it yourselves. And then if not, then you bring it cleanly to a manager of one of those people. And we still have those in place. We still have those mechanisms and frameworks in place, but we're having to work much harder at them. And so we have to be more intentional as to how do we go about bringing the right people into those virtual rooms. How do we make sure that we bring and make progress and then bring other people with us that are perhaps only the informed as opposed to those making decisions?
Yeah, really, really good point. The other thing I was just going to ask you, Jonathan, is in terms of trends in L&D, what are you guys keeping an eye on? What, anything innovative coming up that you guys are interested in terms of delivery, or in terms of approach, or in terms indeed of what you guys are upskilling your employees on?
I think, we're spending a lot. Okay, in answer to the last part of your question, we're spending a lot more time helping our employees with their own well-being. And so we would obviously do an awful lot of work around well-being, because it's not just the physical well-being. There's obviously hydration, there's nutrition, there's sleep, but also then there's thoughts. And so we're spending a lot more time really understanding where people's heads are at and being very, very acutely aware of and offering programs to support the thinking behind our employees and their own mental wellness and well-being. And so that's certainly something that I think we're going to be continuing to see more of, and we're very, very intentional about that. You know, there's up to, I think I think globally we may have sort of 100 different workout sessions that are available every week, virtually. We've got a head of mindfulness who's based in the US, who is part of the learning and development team. And him and his team have come up with some amazing programs. You know, Wellness 2.0 in the US, we do mindfulness programs, retreats, and everything else. So we really want to make sure that we offer as much as we possibly can to those people, to everybody, whether you feel that you need it or not. Now, in terms of other innovative things that I think, whether we're innovative enough is a moot point, but I certainly think that I can see us doing a lot more live virtual work in the future, doing a lot more work around simulation, around how do we go about bringing simulations into the live virtual format. I think we'll also be spending a bit more time looking at, in the future, AI. Obviously, you know, our parent company, Microsoft, is a huge proponent of that. And so I would see us moving into that kind of area in the future. I suppose less innovatively, but more important and more close to my heart has been we would have had a in-person coaching offering that we would have offered external coaches working with managers across the region. And that's moving more and more towards that virtual format. So wherever it is you are in the world, you'll be able to access another human being, a coach, but it'll be all virtual, as opposed to there was a time when I was early on in my career in LinkedIn where that would have been all in person. And so do I think that's innovative? No, it's not terribly innovative, but I think certainly for, as a coach myself, I would have seen that as being something that I wouldn't have seen in the future. And I've seen that come into the very near focus in the last 6 months, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, it's adaptation, isn't it? If it's not innovative, it's certainly adapting to our new reality. Two last questions, Jonathan, if you don't mind. You mentioned the soft skills were in higher demand as of late. Any particular ones?
I think all of them, all of the above. I think certainly, you know, we're offering a lot more programs around, like I said earlier on, about compassion and about self-compassion. About gratitude. We've got live virtual programs that we do around giving outside the box, for example. We've got a program on energy management, which is hugely popular. So there's a lot of those. They're not almost like soft skills as are human skills. Learning about, you know, another one that I really enjoy doing is a program that we call the Gift of Feedback, and that's not so much about giving feedback. It's about being a better recipient of feedback. Yeah. And so those kind of very, very soft skills, and indeed the human skills, if you like, are becoming much more in demand than maybe what comes out of the kind of the hard skill conversation. You know, you need to be better at this, this, and this to do your job better. But certainly it's more around, and to your point that you made earlier on, I think there is a lot more work that we're having to do with our managers about remote management, about managing remotely. How do you go about motivating and inspiring your ICs, your individual contributors that you don't see and you haven't seen in person for 7 or 8 months. Certainly the indications are all suggesting that we will not be back in the office, certainly in Dublin, anytime before the end of the year. And so for some people, they will have started and onboarded new employees whom they've never met. And so how do we go about supporting the manager, but also the individual contributor, the person that's working for them, to get connected with their team and also to get those regular cadence of those really important one-to-one meetings, which seem very simple and seem very boring, but are incredibly important in giving that employee who's new to the company a real connection to the company. You know, you've done your 2-day virtual and onboarding, you've got your laptop that's been sent to you, you know, you haven't actually been in the office in Dublin or in Paris or in London, and yet we're now expecting you to be part of LinkedIn and to be living our culture and breathing our values. And so those kind of things are much harder, certainly to train, but also they're much more in demand in recent months, certainly.
You mentioned earlier, John, one of the first things you said is that each individual, you know, needs to own their own training and development or learning and development, which I wholeheartedly agree with. That said, outside of, say, onboarding, is there any mandatory training that LinkedIn insists that their employees do?
Well, from a learning and development point of view, no training that we offer is mandatory. However, we certainly make sure that, first of all, it's highly encouraged. And second of all, we try to create really compelling events. So if we can create really compelling events, that encourages people to do that. We obviously, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody that they have to mandatory. Now, obviously, there's health and safety, and there's, you know, there's unconscious bias training and other things that we would want to make sure that everybody does around integrity, for example. But no, when it comes to it, we want to make sure that we are creating events that people want to come to. I don't like to see learning hostages in my virtual classrooms or even in person. So I would like to be able to create those learning environments that bring people to them, as opposed to feeling that they have to be there. You know, yeah. My job is to develop exceptional managers. It's to create high performing teams, and it's to inspire those new hires. And so I shouldn't make any of that mandatory. You should want to do it because it's important as part of your own career at LinkedIn that you get to do that, and that you continue on your growth. On your own personal growth journey, that you're able to do that at LinkedIn.
So, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us today. Greatly appreciate it.
Thanks very much indeed, Declan. Love to talk to you.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.